say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be. You need another chance.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo, and man, Mabel, mother, woman, and child, I am telling you, we have a fabulous show today. We are doing something new. People have called me crazy. Thankfully, Dr. Rick Brinkman's here to kind of get me off the ledge. But I am so excited because for the first time on A New Direction, and by the way, this is the anniversary of our third year. Yes, third year. What was that? 156 plus shows later. This is the literally, tomorrow is actually the anniversary. We first started 3 years ago, July 1st. And so I am so excited that Dr. Rick Brinkman is with us. And I'm also excited because my good friend Ralph Peterson is going to be co-hosting the show. They are fabulous. Trust me, we're going to talk about them. You know Ralph. He's written several books. You know Dr. Brinkman. He's done, you know, dealing with people you can't stand. Today, we're dealing with meetings you can't stand. Here's the deal. CEOs, founders, owners, people who have managers, people who like to have meetings, let me just say this. Your meetings suck. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your people would rather stick a fork in their eye and hopefully get to the hospital than be in your meetings. Dr. Rick Brinkman is going to solve that for you and for everyone. He's going to take us flying. You're going to figure out what I mean later when I say he's going to take us flying. So make sure that you buckle up your seatbelts. Make sure that your tray tables are up and the backs of your seats are also up in position. We'll be going to the control tower later. But before we do that, let's do what we do every week, right? I walk you through the four areas of your life, right? We're four-part people. We're physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. And here's the deal, right? We are coming through towards the end, it seems, like the end of the pandemic, and it's pretty exciting for all of us. And hopefully, you have kept up your training in the four areas of your life, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Because here's the truth. We never stay static, because if you're not growing, you're dying. That's just the way it is, folks. So let's just take a look at those four areas and let's rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being miserable, 10 being outstanding. Let's start with the physical area, right? What do I mean by the physical? So evaluate yourself on these four areas, your exercise regimen, eating the right things, getting enough sleep, drinking enough water. If you could rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, how well you did over the past week in those four areas and give yourself a number from 1 to 10, 5 being average, what kind of number would you give yourself, right? The important thing about whatever the number is, it's not that, you know, if you're a 2, that, oh, that makes you horrible. No. That's just the place we want to start, right? So that if you're a 2, we're just going to try to get to a 2.5 because you can certainly do things to get yourself to that next level, right? So you got your first number, your physical number, everybody out there? Okay, good. All right. Second number is the mental number. And mentally, what do we mean? What are you doing to be an active participant in your mental growth? Maybe it's reading a book. Matter of fact, I love the idea of reading books because here's the thing. When you're engaged with a book, you are taking active responsibility for your knowledge and your wisdom and your understanding. And that's the point of the mental area of our life is what are you doing to grow yourself mentally? You know, it could be on several different levels. It could be professionally. It could be personally. You could be doing a number of things to help you learn more and to gather more information so that you become better at what you do and who you are. And, you know, reading is a great source. Don't let the things come at you. Be a part of it. Don't be a mental loafer, right? Be excited about yourself and your mental ability. So on a scale of 1 to 10 out there, how would you rate yourself mentally? All right? 1 being miserable, 10 being average, 5 being average. 10's outstanding. All right, you got two numbers, physical, mental. Emotionally, right, the emotional number. Two areas I want you to evaluate yourself on and put them together. The first is emotionally, because we've been in a pandemic, you have been in emotional training, and we are every day. I promise you, if you're in a relationship with any human being, maybe even not so human, I can promise you that your emotions are going to be tested. So the first area criteria we look at when it comes to our emotional number is how well are you able to control your emotions under stress, being tired, being hungry, being worn out, right? That's the first part, controlling your own emotions under those conditions. And then the second part is how well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of another person? Are you willing to listen actively? Are you willing to truly emote? Can you be empathetic with them? Can you understand that emotion? Can you put yourself in their shoes? Do you even know what the emotion is? Right? So maybe you have to expand your emotional vocabulary. But those are the two areas. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being miserable, 10 being outstanding, how would you evaluate yourself in terms of your emotional quotient? Right? Okay. You got that number? Good. There's three. So there's three numbers. So now we move to the fourth area, the spiritual area, and everybody gets a little weirded out. Oh, I'm not spiritual. We're all spiritual. Move the physical, the mental, the emotional. What do you have left? Spiritual. We all have faith in something. We all believe in something. Matter of fact, when things go bad, we have a tendency to run to something, right? And whatever we run to, whatever that first thing we run to when things go bad, that's what you believe in. That's your faith. That's your God. Whatever that is. For some people it is God. Some people it's nature. Some people it's meditation. Some people it's bad things. Drugs, alcohol. Can be a number of things. It doesn't necessarily have to be good things. Here's the questions you got to ask yourself. Is it working for you? Is it giving you a sense of centeredness? Is it giving you a sense of peace? Or can you have joy in the midst of chaos and your circumstances? That's what the spiritual area is supposed to do for you. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how's that going? And how's it working? Okay, so you got four numbers, right? Physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. What we want to do is we want to think of those as the legs of the chair, right? If the legs are uneven, those four numbers, right? Well, we sit in it long enough, the posture gets bad. And if they're too low, right, it's hard for us to reach into a table that we can eat nutritionally from. And speaking of two people that I have, and so we're going to start with my guest today is Dr. Rick Brinkman. Dr. Rick Brinkman has got it all together. He has got it all together. Dr. Rick Brinkman is a motivational speaker and trainer best known for his conscious communication. By the way, that's a registered trademark. Expertise conveyed to millions of people via keynotes and trainings, radio, television, print interviews, and numerous award-winning books. He is co-author of the international best-selling book, which we've done on the show, Dealing with People You Can't Stand, How to Bring Out the Best in People at Their Worst. And by the way, that's been translated into 25 languages. He's also co-author of four other books, Life by Design, Dealing with Relatives, Love Thy Customer, and Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, which we're going to talk about today, how to meet less and do more. Dr. Rick helps organizations improve leadership performance, teamwork, soft skills, risk, and meeting management, and teaches sales and service professionals how to apply his principles of conscious communication to improve their bottom line results. In short, here's the deal. His techniques produce results-oriented action for your organization because the substance of Dr. Rick's content is embedded by humor into memory. He has received numerous awards, including the Funniest Speaker of the Year by the Sales Forum and the Institute for Management Studies. He is a distinguished faculty. He's also received the Distinguished Faculty Award. He's been featured as an expert at the Wall Street Journal, O Magazine, CNN, CNBC, the New York Times. Here's the deal. There's fewer places he's never been on. His clients have included IBM, Intel, Aetna, NASA, which he's wearing a shirt, Exxon, Chevron, Wells Fargo, Princeton University. Everybody wants him. Everybody wants Dr. Rick because he's that awesome. And then my co-host today is Ralph Peterson. And Ralph Peterson is a friend of the show. You know him well. And Ralph is who was originally caught plagiarizing a Ranger Rick magazine when he was 8 years old. Found out that he shocked everybody when the story he was made to write actually was better than what he copied. So he's written four books. They've all been on the show. The Good Manager, Being Great is Overrated, Managing When No One Wants to Work. Congratulations. Now Get Over Yourself and Adventures in Diet Land. He's a highly sought after keynote speaker in management. So, his column, Five Star Leadership with Ralph Peterson. You can find more. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show my co-host, Ralph Peterson. And welcome to the show, my guest and friend, Dr. Rick Brinkman. Welcome, fellas. How are you?
Great. Great to be with you.
Did you see, Jay? I was holding up all tens today. That's how I'm feeling.
That's how you feel. You got all tens?
It's all tens. Balanced.
It's great having you both on. We've never done this before. This is the first time I've ever had a co-host for the show before, but I thought it would be fitting on the third anniversary of our show that we should probably do something a little bit unique to kick it off. And I can't think of two people I would rather do that with than Dr. Rick, having you back with us and talking about meetings with kids, Dan, and having, of course, Ralph Peterson, my friends with me. I'm going to start this and I'm going to let take over. I'm going to ask you a question that's not in the book, Dr. Rick. And because I don't know the history of this, but it kind of was humorous. And so I thought maybe you would have a humorous anecdote. So I was thinking about meetings. When did they, in the history of having meetings, and we've had meetings forever, right? I mean, you could go into the Bible and there's always been a meeting, a gathering of people, right? When did they start going bad?
Yeah, I think they probably started bad.
I was like, have meetings always been bad?
Well, I don't have the history to go back that far, but I would, if I had to guess, I'd say yes. Some people are going to dominate those meetings. Other people are going to drop out. You don't hear from them. You don't get the highest option.
Okay. That's good for me. The book is great. Ralph and I were talking about the book and we enjoyed reading the book. Folks, I highly recommend that you get your copy of this book. And he even talks about virtual meetings as well. Ralph and I were kind of chatting about it. And one of the things, Ralph, and I'm going to let you kind of take over this, but you know, you talk about the different people that are in our meetings, right? And Ralph said something that was so brilliant that I just had to go, man, that's great. And he said, you know, you talk about the different, like the grenade and the tank and everything like that. And Ralph said, I'll tell you what, I've been every one of those people.
Talking about different personality types in meetings, and I think I've sat in every chair from fly on the wall to the most aggressive, to the sarcastic, to the, you know, the truth teller, the lie spiller, you know.
You're a player there.
Yeah, I'm real curious. I would love to, before we get started, just learn a little bit about you. I don't know as much about you as Jay does, so could you just tell me where you came from and how you even decided to write this book?
Well, I grew up in New York City and completing biology and pre-med at State University of New York. I heard a rumor there was something west of Jersey. So I got a van and I went cross country on an open-ended trip that lasted 3.5 months and 17,000 miles. And I was frying up some wok vegetables in a park in Eugene, Oregon. And the guy came up to me because he saw my New York plates and he started telling me about naturopathic medicine, which I had never heard of before. But it's a holistic medical degree, really prevention, looking at the cause, not just suppressing symptoms with some kind of pharmaceutical, but what's really going on in a person's diet and their life and their attitude, da 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 da. I already had gone through a revolution in diet and eating, you know, whole foods and such, and it sounded great. And I had planned to go to medical school. I was just taking a break. And I went to the school the next day and it was like amazing. It was just the dream come true. And they said, well, you know what? We just found out someone is not coming. Classes start in 7 days. You have all the requirements.
You're in.
And that it was fate with destiny. So the whole naturopathic thing is looking at the whole picture. What's the cause? What's going on? But I got diverted in my course by a medical doctor who was head of OBGYN, and he started counseling patients and digging deeper into what was going on. And he was really a mentor to me. Next thing I know, I'm learning neurolinguistic programming with Richard Bandler and John Grinder, the two founders of that. I got into Ericksonian hypnosis and I started dealing with symptoms that nothing else would work on, even things that should be working or not. And I would pry into people's lives, find out what's going on for them, make these hypnotic audios to change their behavior, their attitude. And lo and behold, rheumatoid arthritis would disappear. A precancerous pap would get normal in 3 weeks. And I became known as a naturopathic shrink. And so that also led to, you know, communication and relationships is one of the big areas that's going to be part of our health and wellness. And so, you know, I started dealing with those areas. That's where dealing with people you can't stand came out.
I love it. I love everything you're saying too. I think one of the most profound things I've ever heard is that human beings are earthbound people. And the reason why that's so profound is because it's saying as if we're bound to the earth and we're from the earth. We're going back to the earth. We're bound to be there. We're bound to it. We're bound to return to it. And so when you start thinking in those terms, you start thinking whole foods, plant-based, you know, not processed. and I'm right on board. There's an awful lot of research out there that shows that, I mean, something as common as a kitchen spice is turmeric.
Uh-huh.
Can do amazing, right? Amazing.
Amazing.
My wife and I drink turmeric tea every night now because it's one of those things. What year was this? When did you make this trip?
1976.
76, all the way across. Was it a VW Bug? I'm just trying to get the image.
No, it was a brand new Dodge van, Tradesman 100. And my girlfriend's mother's boyfriend was a Norwegian carpenter, and he really tricked it out for us, wood paneling and window sills. We could put a plant on it.
I love it. 3-speed on the column.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, that was.
In the book, you talk about your, and you know, it's so funny to me because when I first saw your book, and I read your first book dealing with people you can't stand, which I think is just, first of all, the title just had me, right? I was like, good Lord, if there's an appropriate title for me. And it's not because I can't stand people, but because there's always somebody, you know?
Yes, right.
And I just came across, you know, the whole idea of dealing with people you can't stand is not dealing with them. It's learning to be more open, you know, more empathetic and try to be more holistic at seeing them, which I thought was really great. But you describe in this book where you work in healthcare too. I work in healthcare. You know what we do in healthcare? You know what they're doing right this second? Having a meeting.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's what we do all the time. And so it was so fitting. You were like, you're in the same boat where you're in healthcare, you're a doctor, and you're going, you're all prepared, right? You're thinking you're going to get something, and you end up getting nothing out of the meeting.
Yeah.
So when did you turn to start addressing meetings?
I would say that when I got on the board of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, which would have been like something like 1993. And, you know, I'm the first thing I want to do in any situation is observe what's going on. I remember one of the things that one of the great NLP trainers told us was, you don't want to try to fix people. You want to figure out how they're doing it. It works perfectly. Now, it may be working perfectly to get exactly what they don't want, but it's like that perfect mousetrap, right? So you got to just figure out what's going on. And, you know, what I observe very quickly is, you know, some people talk too much and others don't talk enough. Some people are going to interrupt other people. If people get a little more assertive like that, I see that the more passive people withdraw even further. So now you definitely don't hear that. I notice how we go and somebody could take us off topic where I thought we're focusing on this right now. And why are we going down that tangent over there? So it seemed like when looking at the structure, the fix was rather easy. And I think a good analogy is our two eyes. Okay, we have two eyes that see from two different points of view. Imagine your right eye and your left eye arguing whose point of view is correct. That's absurd. They're both correct. They're both slightly different. And when your brain synthesizes that, you now see three dimensions. So what I think of is what we want in a meeting is holographic thinking, that everybody has a piece of the puzzle. We need to see everybody's point of view. We can't have people dropping out or we're missing pieces. We can't have some people over dominating or we're spending too much time on one piece. So we got to structure it so everybody can feel free and that we're all putting together these pieces. And it really came down to putting three things in place. Number one, there's got to be a speaking order. You got to have some kind of cue. Otherwise, of course, your assertive people are going to over-dominate. Your passive people are going to drop out. And so, you know, you could have a voluntary speaking order where people raise their hands. But I prefer circular in general. We're just going to go around the room because that ensures that you're going to hear from people. Now, if you have too many people, and I would say too many is getting into the upper teens, okay, 12 or so, you can still do, but then you have to maybe do a voluntary thing. And then if you are going to do a voluntary thing, what you have to have is a visual device. When I say visual device, I mean something you see. A whiteboard is visual. A flip chart is visual. A computer hooked to a monitor is visual. And you have to have a queue up there. So, you know, somebody has something to say, and we write their name on the queue. Then another person's talking, that stimulates somebody. They look to that person, they just go like that. So it's non-distraction. Now they're on the queue. Now, human beings can only pay attention to 7, give or take 2 things at any one time consciously, right? So if I'm got something to say, there is no kind of cue, what I'm listening is not to what the person's saying, I'm listening for breathing changes. And when this person stops to breathe, I'm going to jump into that space and say what I have to say. Now that person may not feel like they finished. So now they're listening for breathing changes so they can jump in and say what they have to say. And so you got this thing. Meanwhile, your passive people just are like, but if I see my name on that queue, hey, I know my turn is coming. You know, I see it. I see you see it. We all see it. It's as simple as that. And actually, it wasn't my idea at first. It was our president at the time. And I know, again, me observing, when people go like this, he had a little pad. He goes, okay, so I have Tom, then we're going to have Nancy, and then Nan. Okay, go ahead. And each time he would reiterate that, and I could feel the room just go, and so I thought, well, you know, it's even better. Instead of you reading, let's just put this on the whiteboard. So that was one major thing.
And speaking of which, I'm going to jump in here because you know what, folks? You're listening to Dr. Rick Brinkman and Ralph Peterson and me on A New Direction. Hey, folks, listen, I got 2 great sponsors. I talk about them all the time. One is Epic Physical Therapy. I use them, right? I've been using them for years. They're absolutely outstanding. Look, whether you're an everyday person like myself, or maybe you're a professional athlete, and I have seen literally professional athletes, professional hockey players, professional basketball players, professional golfers, I've seen them all at Epic Physical Therapy. Listen, they don't just deal with your injury or, you know, your symptoms or whatever. Here's the deal. If you just want to move a little bit better, they're going to work with you because they do really understand that they got to deal with the whole functional whole of the person, not just your symptoms or your injury, right? They want the whole person. So they're going to develop a unique program specifically for you, right? And that's what makes Epic Physical Therapy so great. That's what makes them epic. So when you're ready for your epic results, when you're ready for your epic recovery, when you're ready for your epic relief, listen, go to Epic Physical Therapy. It's epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. You know what? For over 35 years, she has been helping people sell their home or buy the home. Here's the deal. We are in a tough market all across this country and maybe even around the world, right? It's just weird how housing has happened, right? Well, when Linda started, interest rates were 18%. So she understands how to deal in a tough market. And what's more, she understands how to develop a relationship because her first clients from back in 1985, still come see her today. That's why her clients call her the legend of customer service. So listen, when you're ready to start your journey, whether it's selling your home or buying a home, don't just start with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. It's just going to make it that much easier. That's lindakraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Dr. Rick Brinkman and his book, oh man, Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand. Ugh, boy, kid, dude, I can't stand them. That's why I work by myself, because I only have to have a meeting with me. And then we got my good friend and co-host, Ralph Peterson, who's just, you know, would you call him the pilot, or is he kind of a co-pilot, or is he?
Taking control of this ship.
You know what? I'm just going to go back to being the flight recorder. You know, because I'm cool with that. All right.
Dr. Rick, I really appreciate everything that you were saying. And there's everything you say makes me want to look for that pause. I'm like, when can I? Just so funny. I think that recording, that's such a smart idea, like such a simple idea. Recording so that people know that they're going to be heard is very important. And you actually make a point in this book. You do something really fun. And that is at the end of every chapter, you give like a little great moments in meeting history, right? Like it's like a little, almost like a proof. It's like a proof of concept, like either a story from you or a story from one of your clients. And there's one lady, you were talking about circle Q, which is, so you say, one effective way, and you say, so I'm from the old school where it's called voluntold. So we tell you it's your turn. That's the opposite of volunteer. We look for volunteers for about 2 seconds and we're like, you're next, right? But so you were saying that a circular is a lot better because everybody knows going in that everybody's going to have to contribute and everybody's going to get a chance to talk and it's going to go right in a circle. You don't have to go, is it my turn? You know it's your turn because you're going around the circle. And there was one lady who said that she, in that environment, would have never spoke up. She would have been one of those flies on the walls, very silent. And she felt a lot more comfortable with the circular logic of the circular cue, which you have communicated. I thought it was very, very smart. Very, what a great takeaway. I have one question. So you do talk about, and there's so many things to get to. You do talk about the different players in a meeting. So you have the tank who we can all just visualize in our head. They're the ones who's going to mold down everybody else's response or be very, very undelicate, if that's a way to put it.
Barely get it done. They don't want to waste time with.
They don't want to waste time. Then you have the sniper who I would call a passive aggressive, which is what most of the people I work with are. passive aggressive, the know-it-alls, the people who think they know it all, the grenades, the friendly snipers. Have you ever, you know what's funny is I'm reading this. I got to tell you that I'm in the position where I train managers. And so it's my job to train people to be the most assertive. And so there is absolutely time for pause, for question, for listening, 1,000,000%. But I also need managers to be like a tank sometimes. Mm-hmm. I do need it to get done, right? I mean, there is.
Right. Tank has gotten really too far. You know, they're going to be hurt feelings. They're going to be reactive behaviors. You know, the tank can set off the grenade, which is a tantrum. So there's a difference between being assertive and direct and on task and then going too far, which we call the red zone in our lens of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's in both books. But
I appreciate that. The reason I'm even thinking about it like this is because in the military sense, the most effective weapon against a sniper, an enemy sniper, is a tank.
Mm.
And the problem with a tank being the most effective is that you of course take down buildings, right? Like you don't just take out the sniper, you take out the neighborhood with a tank.
Right, right.
But at the end of the day, it's still the most effective. And I know there's no correlation. There's probably little crossover here. But as I was reading it, I was like, I don't know. I mean, I can see where a tank might be a little more effective.
Well, you know, what's going to happen is they're going to have the illusion of being effective, but they're basically going to shut everybody down. Then you're going to have all these people whining to their coworkers about, oh, man, I can't believe it was another meeting like that. Now you got whiners and you got negative. What do you think? It's always going to be that way. Nothing ever changes. Every silver cloud is dark lining. And now that's toxic and that spreads like the flu through a team of people. So the tank can have this great illusion that they've moved everything forward, but they're not going to see how much time is going to get wasted in the background.
That's fair.
That's going to occur there. And so here's something, I mean, the tank wants to move forward. So we talked about the cue. You also have to have a focus. What are we talking about now? And how are we talking about it? Because your know-it-all, especially, is just going to dominate the conversation, take it from where it is and go off onto a tangent that has nothing to do with the purpose of this meeting. So I would say as simple as a whiteboard, you put a topic, colon, right now we're talking about the new policy, process, we're looking at the pluses of the new policy and we're going in circular order. So we would then go around the room of what do we like about the new policy? And then once we got the pluses, all right, what are the considerations? All right, any considerations about the new policy? Now you very efficiently have analyzed what's going on. Because if you don't separate, you know, I call this plus minus in the book, it's match, mismatch. Match means you say what you like, mismatches. If you do this randomly, some people are matching, mismatch. Oh, it's a good idea. Yeah, but it's like a shooting gallery. You're not accomplishing anything. So you always have to sort those things out. Everybody's got to be doing the same thing at the same time in the same way. So we've got that. Here's our focus, and that prevents us from going down unnecessary tangents. And here's our process right now. We're brainstorming, or we're matching, or we're in discussion mode, or whatever that is. So that's one of the I had mentioned earlier, there's three major things at a meeting. One is the cue. The other is that topic process to keep us on focus. And the third thing is something Jay mentioned, flight recording. We want to make whatever point people say, make it visual. So again, let's say we were back in the old days when the earth was still cooling and we met in person, we could have a flip chart there or a computer hooked up to a monitor. And if I say, I think this is a really good idea because of blah, 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 blah. And then we'd summarize blah, 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 blah. And now I see it. I see you see it. 5 minutes later, I'm still there. I mean, have you ever somebody repeat themselves in a meeting? Have you ever somebody repeat themselves at a meeting? Have you ever somebody repeat themselves at a meeting? When people repeat themselves, it's an idiot light on your dashboard going, I'm not sure you got it. I'm not sure you got it. You have no clear indication people need feedback from you. So if you make what people say visual, boom, you wipe out all that repetition immediately. But wait, there's more. Auditory communication exists the moment it's said, and then you hear it, and then it's gone. But visual remains over time, and you start to see totality. So one person makes one point, one person has a thing about morale, somebody else mentions the budget, and now we're accumulating. And I would say this is best done on a PowerPoint slide, just with simple bullets. You summarize what people say, and on that slide in the title area, you can use topic process, so that you can use that in a face-to-face meeting where you're projecting it, and it's ideal in a Zoom meeting, somebody's flight recording and you're seeing the screen. So we all know what we're talking about, how we're talking about it. We use the chat in the Zoom as our speaking order. So when you have something to say, you just put your name in the chat and then you relax and listen to everybody else. And then you start to see totality of concepts, because some people are going to be more aware of the morale thing. So the tank is going to be more aware of the efficiency aspect. And that's what gives you the hologram, because you get all the factors, not in opposition, but in accumulation. You hear from everybody and you get done so much faster at such a higher quality. It's like crazy.
It's really great. But there's a great a great brainstorming thing that I've been involved in. And it so is key to what you're saying. And it's called Ideas That Stick. Hmm. It's where we're writing down on a note stick, you know, what our ideas or what our change ideas, and then we put them up on a whiteboard, and then those that stay, and those that don't, right? So it's a little Ideas That Stick. You're speaking to the same thing.
Visual totality.
Yeah. And I think one of the fun things, you tell a great story about somebody who is always snarky. And so are you telling the story that you did it or somebody else did it?
That was someone else. There was a manager who ran a meeting, and his upper manager, his boss, would attend these meetings, even though his boss
had nothing to do with it.
Right. At this meeting, and his boss would be disruptive, making snarky comments and start arguing one point of view. And then when people start to lean that way, then he turns around and argues the other point of view. And so this person running the meeting told me the story, went to the whiteboard. He goes, I don't want to let a good idea go. And so he started flight recording. So when people, you know, said what they said, he would record it. And people started to like that. And when the boss made a snarky comment, he just wrote it on the whiteboard. And the boss never showed up again.
It's such a good point that when you highlight how interruptive it is and what his actual statement looks like on paper.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, well, that's not helpful. Talk about holograms. You did talk about it a little bit, but that's a hologram is like the holy grail. That's where you have everybody clicking, everybody working together. The ideas are flowing, and it's a bunch of what I would say yes and. Mm. Nobody is no but, yeah, yeah. But it's all yes and.
Yeah, because it's totality. It's different parts of it. You know, I mean, think of four legs on the chair. Which one don't you need? Fall just whichever way you fall over. It's what Jay brought up in the beginning. No one is more important than the other. So that's the holographic.
So thinking. How do you set it up? How do you set up a holographic?
Well, you definitely want to put these three things in place. You start out by saying, hey, everybody, how'd you like to try a meeting process that might make our meetings shorter, more focused, and everybody's going to go, oh, no, we wouldn't want that. What are we going to do for a waste of time and misery?
You're going to give me a couple extra bucks, too? Get out of here.
Well, see, of course. Yeah, I'll try anything. I'll do anything, please. Shorter and more productive. Okay, so here's how it's going to work. And you're going to have a queue, and then, you know, you use the chat if we're talking in Zoom or what's the whiteboard, and explain focus and process. This will be right there so you know what to talk about. You also, there's a time limit for speaking. Anytime you say it's 2 minutes, whatever. I have found that once you put actually that focus, the whiteboard, and the cue in place, you never have people running over their time. It's just effortless. Everybody just, you know, is direct to the point. And so you just, and you say, we're going to try it. Try it. If you like it, you keep it. If not, forget about it. We'll go back to the old terrible way. So, and people are going to grab this thing like a life preserver. I don't think I've ever heard anything that human beings universally hate as much as meetings.
You know, there's another part that you talk about. So you're talking about cues, because how do you not go over your time? I'm Jay and I are both professional speakers, which means we inevitably go over time. We just drive by the clock. And so there's always somebody in the back waving at you, you know, trying to get your attention. And much like Jay will be in about 3 minutes. As he does another read. But you talk about grunting.
Yeah. So okay.
As a verbal cue, or I mean, an audio cue. You
yeah, that's stuff that we did. Yeah.
And maybe to, you know, you know.
I don't push that as far anymore, but when we first put that in place, the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, that was because what happened, what I noticed, all right, secondly, once we put these pieces in place with the cue and the flight recording, as we call it, and the clear focus, it was more silent in the room. I mean, it was very focused, but it was silent. And so I felt there needed to be some, just a little bit of feedback for people, aside from that they, what they see is written. And I don't remember how we came up to it. We voted on it, and we came up with grunting. So if somebody's saying something, you really go. We might have gotten it from Tim Allen, I think, actually. And some people wouldn't go, rah, rah, rah. They go, grunt, 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 grunt. What was really interesting to me, though, years later, when I was even off the board, but then I came back to help sometimes, people would still say that. And they were using, like, I grunt what you're saying. Yeah, I grunt that. And I thought, wow, what about people who don't know the origins? They're going to think, what? But I found that was, now when I was in the UK and I was doing seminars, so we were doing like, we had 98 people. So we broke them into groups. They're going to practice this stuff in a meeting. And their first assignment was to figure out a verbal signal. What are they going to do? And what came out of those, one was the golf clap. Little golf clap, but the one that came out most popular was a chair tap. You would take your pen and just tap it a little bit on the metal chair leg. So it's a little ding, 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 ding. You know, you don't want something disruptive, but a little bit of feedback. Now there's
I'm newlywed, so that I'd be looking for my wife if you started thinking on a glass sound. I have a friend who I was just in a meeting. So I read your book a couple of weeks ago. And so I'm just trying to refresh for this. And I'm in a meeting yesterday. It's a board meeting for a nonprofit. And there is the woman running it, so lovely. But when she listens to you, she actively listens to you with a hum. You know, like that kind of, and the deeper and the longer it goes, the more she's enjoying it, you know, like she's in agreement. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, she's grunting over here. It's kind of like this.
Yeah.
But it's also nice because we need that reassurance.
Yes, you got a little bit of feedback. Right. Mm-hmm. I would agree. I think that does definitely adds a dimension. I don't push it as much anymore, but it definitely adds a positive dimension.
We're going to let Mr. Izzo jump in here.
You know, I want to start moving on towards, we still got a minute and some before we do that. So we still, yeah, because we're only at 38:26. Here's the behind the scenes people. You're actually listening, right? I've got the flight recorder and I've got the time, and I'm also the traffic controller. We're going to be getting into that, by the way. We're going to talk about traffic control with Because you have, you did, Rick, have a great analogy, and I was literally flying on a plane when I read this book. I literally was on a plane, and I'm sitting there in the plane, and I'm trying to get from Lincoln, Nebraska, back to Raleigh, and my flight was delayed 4 hours, and so I was able to finish the book, and just so I mean it's highlighted in all sorts of yellow and everything, right? And I'm sitting here and I'm listening as I'm reading the book, and you're giving the analogy of the pilot and the co-pilots and all the players. And I'm in the airport and the traffic controllers and the flight recorder and everything. And I'm like going, holy cow, I'm watching all this happen. And I never thought about it that way. And the analogy works so well. And so in a few seconds, did you get this idea while you were in an airport by chance?
Yes. I've done 4,000 programs in 18 countries. I spent a lot of time in airports and planes. And I think the analogy of a meeting is like a airplane flight. A bunch of people are in a contained space. They may not want to be there. It's uncomfortable. It could start late. It's a plane leaves late, and that it could take longer. Now they're going to miss their connections on the other end. It could stray off course or get hijacked. And so your listeners have already heard us use these terms, and that's the big three that you want. You need a pilot who's going to keep us on course. I mean, imagine you get on a plane, the pilot goes, well, we're going to leave at some point and get somewhere sometime.
I'm not comfortable being on that plane.
So, I mean, and right, there's a flight plan. They know where they're going to be at every city. Now we're over Boston. Now we're over here. And that's the agenda. That's the preparation. That's part as important of the meeting as the preparation. Right. And your agenda is the flight plan. And then your pilot is the one to keep us on course with the flight plan. Air traffic control is the whole speaking order. So I usually think there should be three process people, even though they're also participants. Let's say one person is doing the queue. Let's say it was a whiteboard and we're physically together. So one person's managing the queue. Another person is at that computer that's being projected. So that's the flight recording, getting bullets of people's things. And it's the pilot who's the primary timekeeper. All right, we got five more minutes. We'll do one more round, and then we're moving on to the next subject. And in the virtual meeting, let's just take Zoom for example, you'd have the chat as your cue, but you'd assign one person to pay attention to the chat, because the person who is sharing their screen is the flight recorder, because they need to see. So they're on the slide is topic process to stay on course and all the bullet points. And the pilot is, well, the air traffic control is calling on people, or the pilot can also call on people. In fact, in a virtual meeting, you can have just two process people.
This is going to be great after break, by the way. You're listening to Rick Brinkman, author of Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand. Friends, get your bosses to listen to the last half of the show, okay? Just lure them in, or watch on Facebook, right? You're listening to him and Ralph Peterson right here on A New Direction. Folks, listen, Epic Physical Therapy offers the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, including the Alter G anti-gravity treadmill, Norma Tech compression sleeves, and the Game Ready, my favorite, ice, cold, water, and compression all at the same time. That's just a few of the things that they have. They are trained and certified in the most comprehensive cutting-edge treatments available, including blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping. That's just a few. Listen, you know what? When you're ready for your epic relief, epic recovery, epic results, don't look any further. Go to Epic PT. That's EPICPT.com. Yes, EPICPT.com. I said it one more time, EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, you know what? Doesn't matter where you live in the world. Really, if you don't live, it doesn't. They can help you. Why? Because she's not affiliated with a national company, so she's built relationships with the best experts all over the world. It doesn't matter if you want to sell your home, buy your home, you know, in a tough market, she knows who the best expert is going to be in your area because she's unaffiliated. That's why she's been around for over 35 years at the top of her game. Her motto one time was, she knows her business. The truth is she knows people. And that's what makes her successful. So when you're ready, sell, buy, take a look at lindacraft.com. That's lindacraft.com. I'll say it again, lindacraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Dr. Rick Brinkman, dealing with meetings you can't stand, and my co-host and partner today, Ralph Peterson. Guys, I'm just enjoying the heck out of this. This has been fun, and Ralph, I'm digging your perspective. And are you both having a good time here, Rick, Dr. Rick?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm having a great time. You know what I love? I love that this book came out in 2017, and you have a whole chapter dedicated to virtual meetings.
Yeah.
When I first saw the chapter title, Virtual Meetings and Conference Calls, I went like, all right, when does this book come out? Because 2020 had to have some impact. You were already doing virtual meetings.
You were
already talking about it. I love the little quote that you gave by Margaret Atwood. It says, I exist in two places, here and where you are.
I got to credit my daughter for that one.
So great. And so let's just talk about it, because this really does apply for virtual meetings. It's the same.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's even simpler in a virtual meeting. I don't think people are stressed out because they're not traveling, so to speak. Even if you were in a building and you had to go to third floor or building C or whatever, so you eliminate that kind of thing. And you know, the structure is there already. Share the screen, so flight recording, your topic process. Incidentally, on your agenda, I would say, there's, aside from here's the item, here's how long we're going to spend on it, you want to have, here's the topic, here's the process we're going to use. We're going to have a presentation from Yin, then we're going to have 20 minutes of discussion about it, and then we're going to make a decision. So that you want people to know, what do you want from me? So there, I would think there should be a certain topic process. The purpose of this agenda item is, and in two sentences or less, everybody should know why that is significant, and we're spending our valuable time on it. And then a statement of focus. What do you want from me? We want you to look at this new policy from every possible angle and see if there are any downsides that we might be missing. So that orients everybody at the meeting, and it's even actually helpful once people are at the meeting. They don't take you down tangents, because there's that clear focus as to what we really need, what's the goal here. So that's part of the agenda, and that's all flight preparation.
You know what's so great about that is, in management, when we're, and again, I train managers in healthcare, one thing that we're always looking for every time, whenever we're talking about a policy, we're always looking for the so what. There always has to be a so what.
Yeah.
You do this, why are we doing that? Yeah. What's the purpose of this? And you have to have a good, compelling so what, or you're not going to get people to buy in.
Right. Exactly. And in communication, I think of that. I think of communication like a phone number. You need all the digits, and you need them in the right order. So the first three are the area code. That gets you in the right general vicinity. And in what we're talking about here, the statement of intent, purpose, that's the area code. All right, we're trying to find a new policy that does blah, blah, blah. That's your area code. Then from there, you can get more specific. Here's the criteria that we need to satisfy. We can't increase the budget, and we don't have more staff. So those are two limitations. But what we want to have happen is people have like they've contributed, blah, blah, blah. And you specify these criteria. And now you've got people understanding the purpose, understanding the limiting criteria and the criteria they're trying to satisfy. You know, it's got to be okay with HR. It's got to be easily implemented. It can't cost us anything to implement this. And now you've got a group of people who are really focused. And then you go around that room and you start going through ideas like a wood chipper. I mean, it gets so efficient and so fast. It's like stunning.
And it's very fun.
It's fun. Suddenly the meeting becomes fun. You actually know what you've accomplished.
And because everybody is all of a sudden relaxed to be in a creative flow.
Yes.
And all answer, you know, everybody's being heard. Everybody's having time to talk. We're yes-anding each other.
Yeah.
It is. I was just in that kind of meeting yesterday.
That's great.
And it was so, so fun. And on the other side, I've been in meetings where, you know, even if you had the cure for cancer, you weren't going to give it up, you know, like if you came in with $100 for every person, you know, 2 seconds and you're like, I'm going to keep the money. I'm not kidding.
Right. I love the yes and, because a lot of people start with a but, and anytime you lead with your but, it sounds like where you're going is going to contradict where you just came from. But people a lot of times are not, you know, there's multiple factors. So it's not a but, it's a, in addition, here's another thing we have to consider. And again, because you flight record and you start seeing all these points, that also helps eliminate the butt thing.
I love, it's so fun to hear different people's vernacular, because I use the word scribe. Like, I knew who's going to be my scribe. And for you, it's flight recorder, you know, because you're using the airplane. I'm always using military lingo for some reason. You know, it's just always a weird little dichotomy. I got to say that I don't know how to express how ecstatic I was as I'm reading your book and I'm going through and I'm like, Jay, I got highlighted. I'm tearing it apart and I'm really enjoying it. And I had, there's this underlying thing throughout the entire thing. I'm thinking of one thing and I can't believe I rolled across and there it was, Robert's Rules of Order. I couldn't believe you have a chapter on Robert's Rules, because I was like,
plus I got my arm around Robert. Use it a little.
I didn't realize that was you.
General Robert.
So for those who don't know who Robert is, tell us.
Well, he developed this whole parliamentarian system that is being still used today in our Congress and all around around the world. So he was quite the organizational thinker in terms of, but a lot of times this is how boards have to make decisions. So they follow Robert's rules. But, you know, first of all, a lot of people like to quote Robert's rules. They don't know bleep about Robert's rules, because I've never found anybody who knows this one. Nobody speaks twice until everyone speaks once.
Ooh.
That's a Robert's rule, baby.
I like that a lot.
So what you have to do.
Wait, what?
Gets to speak twice until everybody's been heard from once.
That's in Robert's Rules?
Yeah. Well, Robert's Rules is really a book this thick.
Here we go. We're digging it out.
Yeah, downstairs.
I didn't even, all the years I've done Robert's Rules, I didn't know that that was a rule.
Yeah, right. Right. I mean, when, you know,
the book.
One thing is that, you know, like, technically you can't have a discussion unless there's a motion on the floor, but you can't work like that. You have to have a discussion, and then a motion is to take action on it. So in a way, a board has to integrate that Robert's Rules with its own process, that let's discuss the possibility of this new way of doing things, whatever it is we're discussing. It doesn't have to have a motion, but after our quality discussion and we look at all the factors, then we might realize what we want to put in place. And that's when you put a motion in place and you go back to Robert's Rules to officially vote it in.
So let's talk about how does this, I'm going to just follow up Ralph's question. How does, you know, working your method, making it holographic and, you know, the airplane analogy, how does that fit into Robert's Rules?
Well, you have to be able to discuss things without having a motion in place. So you have to agree to that, because really a discussion is looking at all different aspects of things. The motion is already a specific action or thing we want to put in place, but you can't be specific about that until you look at all the factors and you've heard from everybody in the room. And that's once you get the holographic understanding, then it's very simple to create the motion that's going to produce your result. So you just have to agree on a board that you can have discussions, and you're not in Robert's Rules at that point. You're in Rick's Rules of Order.
I like Rick's Rules of Order. I just want to let you know.
Record, topic, process, and cue.
What I really appreciate about your approach, two things. One, it's very practical. Everything is just, it makes sense. And again, the whole time I'm thinking Robert's Rules of Order, oh, you know, and so to see that theme and then you brought it up in the end, I thought it was so, so I truly went, oh my God. And my wife's like, did you find money? Kind of. No, I found Robert's Rules. But the other thing is that it really highlights that there is, and this is something that I have struggled with. And I know a lot of people in management do struggle with, and that is, who's in charge to lead the meeting and who's in charge to participate in the meeting, or who's responsible for participating. And the way, when you read your whole book, you're making two distinctions, because you talk a lot about how many people are in the meeting, who should be in the meeting, who shouldn't be in the meeting.
Yeah, for sure.
And you clearly put it out there to anybody reading this book that there are two things. Number one, if you're in the meeting, you're supposed to be in the meeting. And if you're supposed to be in the meeting, you're supposed to participate in the meeting.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, now everybody, not just the manager should read this book. The entire team should read this book. And they should understand that if they're being asked to join the meeting, they're being asked to contribute.
Yes.
They're being asked to pay attention. The whole idea of putting cell phones in a basket, everybody grabs a pen and a pad of paper, you know, pay attention, be a participant.
That's part of preparation, is knowing who should be there and who should not. And a lot of time, there's the active doers. Those are the people who should be at a meeting. And then there's the need to know people. And a lot of times those need to know people are invited to meetings. I have a friend in the UK who's in banking, and he said 50 meeting invitations a day or something. He would have to have himself in quadruple to attend these meetings. And a lot of them are not, why do I have to be there? Yeah, I need to know what happened, but I'm not the active participant. And if you do the flight recording like we talked about, then it's very easy to inform the need to know. It's a clean and a PowerPoint slide. Here's the discussion. Here's the bullets. Here's what we discussed, our topic, our process, et cetera. So you definitely have to sort out those need to know meeting people.
Agreed. I just love that you put the onus on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So, fellas, we've been on almost an hour.
Oh, wow.
It was like 8 minutes.
Yeah,
fast. It's such a great meeting. Thank you, Jay.
No, thank you. This has been great. Just listening to you, because Ralphie, your experience, you have to deal with this every day. And then Dr. Rick, man, gosh, what a great book. Dealing with meetings you can't understand. You've been on the show before. I ask all the time, you know, if you could, you know, the show's called A New Direction because we try to help people find a new direction. If you could, based on your book, what new direction would you leave folks dealing with meetings that they can't stand?
That meetings can actually be great, and you can be the agent of change. Just bring it up to people. Start out with, how'd you like to hear an idea makes our meeting shorter, more productive? Nobody says no to that. And all right, let's try this experiment, and here's how it works. You establish the three things. Look at the template for the agenda in the book, for sure, because having a good flight plan is critical to staying on track at the meeting. I would always say somebody should be a time log keeper at the meeting. How long did things take? Because if you do that a few times, you're going to have a real sense of certain topics and what you really need for those certain. Oh, we can talk about the finances in 10 minutes. No, look at the history. 25 minutes. Right. That's the quickest we have ever done. So that's a nice, extra helpful bonus tip for you.
Awesome. Thank you. And Doc, you can find him, by the way, at drrickbrinkman.com, by the way. He is so anxious right now to be hired out and just go travel. he really is. And Ralph Peterson, tell everybody how we can get a hold of you.
RalphPeterson.com. And I think just the synopsis, or just to put a big cherry on what you said, Dr. Rick, is that you said in one of your quotes in the book is there's always somebody, or meetings are, you take minutes at meetings and it costs you dollars or something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't find the quote quick enough.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's the show. You know what I say to you? Here's the deal, right? You are control, regardless of what's going on in life, two things, your attitude and your effort, all the time. Right? So take advantage of that, because you can change that. Didn't say it was easy, but you can do it. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as I say to you every week, and you know what that is, right? Shalom.
A new direction, a brand new day. A new direction, things are going to change. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry anymore. A new direction.